This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy 2006 Year-End Roundup, sponsored by GeekArmor.com.
Yeehaw!
We're doing it all. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com 2006 year-end roundup. My name is Josh, and I'm here with Connor.
Howdy.
And Ron.
Yeah.
And iFanboy.com, you normally know us for liking comics, which we read and do our pick of the week podcast, and that's all fun and well and good. You can go to the website and talk about comics there. But we're also rabid media consumers. We watch the movies and the TV and
media
music.
Whores, and I would even say.
We are whores. And last year we did it, and this year we're going to do it again. We're going to talk about the stuff that's stuck in our heads from 2006, and that includes movies and TV and music and even IPTV, which is kind of like TV but not the same. And we might even, if you stick around to the end, we may mention comics. We have a thing for them. I don't know. And like normal, we are going to talk about stuff that we've seen, so maybe if you haven't seen any of this stuff, something could get spoiled.
So be warned.
Be warned.
Me hearties.
It's fine. We're not going to ruin all the movies for you.
Right,
we won't do that. But
she's a dude. Oh, wait. That was like 12 years ago. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I wait, what, 12? Share. It was 91, 92. Right?
If you sing that, do we have to pay for it? Game.
All right. So,
oh, God. We have a whole lot of stuff to
we
do.
We do. It's going to be a long show. So buckle up. It's going to be a...
Buckle in.
It's going to be a bumpy ride.
And apparently we're cliched now.
So let's talk about movies first.
Yippee.
let's get excited about movies.
It was, overall, it was a rough year to get excited about movies.
Was it?
Well, I think that when we all looked at everything that came out this year to go back, we hadn't seen a lot of movies.
We made this point on the show last year. We're making it again this year. We don't go to movies as much as we used to.
Last year, I went to a lot of movies. This year, Connor went to more movies than any of us.
Which is a shock.
How many did you go to?
14 or 15?
I went to 14. I recounted.
I think out of all of them came out, I saw about 12 of them. 13, I just saw one today.
No, that's wrong. I've seen... We got a list of all the movies that came out this year, and I saw 15 of the movies, only 9 in theater.
Ah, interesting.
Mm-hmm. I've been, you know, it's DVD.
Netflix.
But just overall, it used to be that every weekend you could look and try to find something to go see. This year, there were a lot of bare weekends where I didn't want to go see anything. But that didn't mean there wasn't some good stuff.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think the I'm a discerning moviegoer. I get not by you guys, but some of my other friends make fun of me because they would say I never not like movies, but because I don't go to movies that I might not like. Like, I don't take risk on going to the movies. Like, I do a lot of research. I read a lot of reviews. I make sure I'm going to like the movie before I go see it. So ultimately, I walk out of the theater liking the movie.
Whereas Connor refuses to listen to reviews. If I tell him reviews about it, he goes, I don't care.
Yes. No one else has my opinion, so...
No, I think that's fair. No, but I mean, like, the thing is,
no,
like...
If it's between
going to see, you know, Clerks 2 or Saw 3, like, I'm not even bothering with Saw 3 because I don't like that genre. I don't like those type of movies, you know? Yeah. But, like, even though Fred Topel does, I like kind of movies like that, you know? Let's talk about specific movies now, why don't we?
All right, well...
So let's talk about the big events.
It was a banner year for comic based material, I guess you could say. And we already did long reviews on X3 and Superman Returns, and we did talk about V for Vendetta for a while, but those did all come out this year, and that is significant.
And if you go back in our feed, you can see those episodes.
Yeah, you can go to our podcast page and you can look at them directly.
Superman Returns, good. X-Men United,
bad.
And
awful.
We were all in
agreement.
In agreement on that.
And I got to tell you, 6 months later, X3 still stinks.
Did you see it?
You saw it again?
No, I haven't. No, okay. Well, you got that plane ride?
Wait.
So here's a little anecdote. Connor and I were flying back from San Francisco, and we get on the plane, and they announce it. And the in-flight movie this week is X-Men 3, The Last Stand. And I was about six rows in front of Connor, and I stood up and turned around and just made a face. I went, huh? Like, tilted our head. Neither of us watched it.
I didn't watch it.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a question. The DVD came out.
No, I haven't bought it. Hey!
Oh, wait a minute. No. He said I haven't bought it.
Because it came out during the Christmas. It came out during this Christmas.
You're going to buy it.
Yeah, I probably will.
Why?
Because it's the fucking X-Men.
Would you watch it?
Yeah, I'll watch it again. I'll watch it with a fine tooth comb. Actually, I'm really interested in Ratner's commentary. To be honest with you, from like the same reason why I was interested in Schumacher's commentary.
Rent it. He gets less money, and they're less likely to make another one.
Oh, I would like another one, not with him, though.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
They're going to make another one with him.
I know.
Okay. But one of the things I wanted to sort of get in with these movies is, like, how do you feel about them, I guess, since then? Have you thought about it anymore? Have you seen either of you watch Superman again?
Yes.
You have?
Mm-hmm. I haven't. You have?
Yeah.
When did you watch Superman?
I
say it like he's cheating on me.
He got it. It means he picked it up.
Did you buy
moratorium.
It?
No, I rented it.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Where'd you rent it?
And it holds up for you?
Yeah, definitely.
Because one of the things that I've noticed is that Superman, since it's come out, when it first came out, the first week, everyone was like, oh, it was fun, it was great. Since then...
I disagree with you. I remember the reaction being very mixed in the beginning.
It was half and half, but lately, since then, the only thing I've heard from comicdom a lot is that not so much. People...
I've heard a little bit of that. I've heard a little bit backing down from how great it was.
Right, because they're like, he didn't fight a lot in it or whatever, and you know, I still remember it's one of the favorite movies that I saw. It was the one movie that I know I walked out of this year. I walked out of the theater and I was like, that was so much fun. I had a great time.
You see, now that's the thing is that I think this year, because of Superman and X3, like, I've been able to separate the actual movie going experience from the quality of the movie. Like, because Superman gave me chills and we enjoyed it. We had a great time going to see it and all stuff like that. And maybe it doesn't hold up in the later viewing. I haven't watched it yet, so I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't put that past it, but that doesn't change.
How many viewings did you give in the theater?
I think I saw it three times in the theater.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw at least two.
Wow.
So I went with my parents, my dad.
I didn't know
that. Three times.
So.
Well, then that should hold up.
Yeah,
although I saw The Phantom Menace 10 times in the theater.
Well, yeah, but that was a different age.
Yeah, I don't even remember that summer.
Do you remember episode 3 that we tried to see like 5 times in one day? We had this whole plan.
Yeah.
Did we do it or no?
No, we had to sleep.
Yeah.
You sound like a couple right now, by the way.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Anyway.
Not together.
No, it was like we saw it at midnight, and then
another big comic movie is V for Vendetta.
Now, have you guys gotten a chance to see it?
I have
not seen it.
Oh, okay.
I would like it for Christmas if anyone in my family's listening. Oh, wait, this is a post-Christmas.
It's out in the living room.
Oh, yeah.
Which didn't break the embargo because it was a Hanukkah present from my wife's wife's mom.
Nice. Very good.
It was within the V for Vendetta. You know what's funny is I walked out of the theater and I didn't like it so much, but in retrospect. I wanted to watch it again because I think that I was too hard on that. I was too close to the source material.
You have to separate it from the source material.
I realize this now.
It stands up on its own as a movie. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have the book, From Hell, not like Leave Extraordinary Gentlemen, which are bad movies and bad adaptations. This is a good movie. You just have to forget the fact that
like a lot of other. I mean, I'm not going to put it in the same league, but like The Shining. Shining has nothing to do with the book.
Right.
But it's a good enough movie.
Gordon the intern loved V for Vendetta, by the way. Like, it was one of his favorite movies this year. So,
and I can see why. And if I hadn't read the book, I think that I would have.
Yeah, well, he read the book. I mean, I made him read the book before he saw the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it was. Oh. Yeah.
If you weren't listening to the show back then, that's probably one of my favorite Alan Moore stories. Definitely.
That's good. It's quality.
It's real good.
It's quality.
Yes.
There's another event movie which Ron did not see, but Casino Royale, the Bond reboot.
Connor and I were arguing over who would get to hang out with Daniel Craig if he ever showed up because we both love him so much.
Probably neither of you.
No, probably not. No,
probably
like,
me because I don't care.
This movie
was awesome.
And listen, my caveat to that is I'm not a huge Bond fan.
Except you've got a big James Bond statue on
I
your
have,
desk right
I have Sean, I have Sean Connery over there. That's different. But I mean, like,
I'm a huge Bond fan.
When the movies come out,
who was
the
first Bond?
Sean Connery.
No, there was the guy before him. No. George Lazenby.
He was after Sean Connery.
He was good, right?
That one movie was good. He wasn't.
The movie was not that good. I mean, he wasn't the good. The movie was very good.
Good script. Same thing with one of the Timothy Dalton.
Yeah, I like Timothy Dalton.
A View to a Kill.
License to Kill.
License to Kill was the worst one.
A View to a Kill.
Living Daylights was a very good Bond movie.
The song is A View to a Kill in License to Kill.
No, A View to a Kill was Roger Moore.
Oh, was it? Yeah, was Duran Duran.
Yeah.
To a
Grace Jones.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
anyways, the kind of Bond fan I am, like when they come out, I go see them in the theater. I don't buy them. I don't watch them again.
I didn't even see the last Pierce Brosnan one.
Really? I usually go see them.
I love Bond. I didn't see that one because I got fed up with those superhero
movies. With Halle Berry, right?
No, it was one with Denise Richards.
She's my cousin.
Anyway, this movie is I don't want to say it's the best Bond movie, but it's up there, and it's the best one in a long time because they got away from the wacky. There were still some quips, there were some things, but it was an action movie. It was about if you were this kind of spy, what you would actually be like.
Have you read the books?
No, but that's what the books are like.
Yeah, I've read the book. I've read not all of the books, but that's the Bond from the books. It's the Daniel Craig Bond.
There are some scenes in this movie, though, that are like, they were actually, I don't want to say revolutionary, but they were just really good scenes from movies. And I say that because a lot of times you were like, it was good in the context of a Bond movie. But at the same, there were action movies. There were action scenes in this movie that, like, they stood out in the way that Hong Kong action movie scenes stand out. Like, in that sense. Like, the athleticism and the special effects going together. Like, everything working together in a way that you're watching it and you're seeing something that is like, wow, I can't believe I'm looking at this. In a way that's different than when you watch, say, Lord of the Rings or something, you look at those special effects and you're like, I can't believe I'm seeing this. The stunt guy in the first scene of Casino Royale.
Yeah, the street racing.
Yeah, I mean, it was absurd movie making.
It was actual believable acting.
Yeah.
From Daniel Craig.
Exceptionally good. There's also a scene in there. It's one of the most uncomfortable scenes I've ever watched.
The torture.
Yeah, the torture scene. Oof.
I heard about it. Yeah, I heard this in balls.
Some nuts get whacked.
Yeah, I just had no desire to see it. I don't like Bond. Not that I don't like him, I just have no attraction. So,
I would give it a shot.
This movie, than the others, is you don't have to be into Bond. This is almost like it's not Bond.
I like the billboards a lot, though. I thought they were nicely designed. But I didn't want to go see the movie.
Another movie, this is one we actually all saw together, which is a rarity.
I think it's the only one on the list.
And
no, it's not. Superman.
We didn't all see that together.
Yeah, we did.
No, we didn't.
I lived in California earlier in the year.
Oh, right. You see, it's like you're here, and it's like you've been here the whole time. Yeah. That's why, yeah.
The Departed, Martin Scorsese, Jack Nicholson, Matt Damon,
If I could marry a movie, I would marry this movie.
That's kind of extreme. It was good. I'll give you that. I might go out on a couple of dates with it, but, I mean, and I enjoyed it. I mean, I'm a big Scorsese fan.
Now, keep in mind, nothing will ever be.
Thank you.
Nothing will ever be as good as the Uncanny X-Men from Byrne and Claremont. Nothing will ever be as good as Goodfellas. So this is in comparison to Goodfellas.
My thing, listen.
And that's Ron's opinion.
The Goodfellas is the most watched DVD I have. I put it on very frequently.
When there's nothing going on, you just have it on the
background. I watch Goodfellas all the time. I know every
line.
Actually,
we were at
that
bar the other night, and it was just playing in the background. I was like, it's a good bar.
I live down the street from where they shot his childhood home. I'm so excited. I haven't walked over there yet, though.
It's not. It's just a house.
It doesn't matter.
I know. Yeah, it's awesome.
It's across the street from Tootie's cab stand.
It's awesome.
But
the Departed was good. This was
the best Scorsese movie we've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked Gangs of New York, but really, as a whole movie, it didn't hang together.
Departed did.
The Departed definitely did.
It was long as fuck.
I didn't even notice
it.
I felt it. But it was good. It was good.
I think it's early runner-up. Early contender for film of the year.
Yeah,
it's
close.
It's my number two of the year.
Excellent performances in it. I can't stand Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't like
him.
And he was really good. Matt Damon playing a bad guy?
Best actor in the whole movie, though, that we're all in agreement on, I believe.
Alec Baldwin.
Best supporting nod. If he doesn't get nominated for best supporting for this movie, it's a crime.
Even
he was fantastic.
Even Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Who's going to actually get the supporting nod, I think.
Is he?
Yeah.
His character didn't really.
But apparently everybody loved it. Yeah, I didn't. Yeah.
But his character wasn't really. It was a side character. Not even supporting. Supporting character, I'm going to. Martin Sheen in that was just fantastic.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah, everybody was awesome. Everybody
I mean, there wasn't a weak point.
I didn't like the
Jack
girl.
Nicholson?
I didn't like the woman.
No, she was good. Jack
Nicholson was good. Even though he channeled a little Napier.
Yeah, he did. He did. You're right.
I don't think that's true. Napier is Jack. Yeah, playing him.
But when you hire Jack Nicholson, you've got to hire Jack Nicholson. You get Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, I didn't like the chick. I didn't like the girl. But that's just me.
So. Well, that's a Scorsese female role. They're never really good.
Yeah. No, but I didn't like the actress. I don't know the role. I don't care. I thought the role was fine. I didn't like the actress.
You know what she looked like? She looked like she lived in Boston, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Casting wise, like she really like she reminded me of a girl from Boston.
Yeah.
So, but hugely thumbs up from all of us.
I believe. Yeah, definitely.
Go
definitely
see it if you were thinking about it. But like, you need us to tell you that. Another. Let's go with a different.
a little different direction.
Yeah, let's go with a completely different direction. The indie darling of the year.
I'll go as far as to say the overrated indie darling of the year.
I was wondering about it.
We're talking about Little Miss Sunshine with Greg Kinnear, Steve Carell, what's her name, Toni Collette, about the little girl and the family.
Alan Arkin,
who was great.
Awesome,
he was really
in
good
that movie.
I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong, I thought it was good. But in the same way that, do you remember when Garden State came out?
I was going to say the same thing.
And in Garden State, Natalie Portman makes Zach Braff listen to The Shins.
Yeah.
And she's like, you have to listen to this, it'll change your life. Well, The Shins are good. The Shins aren't changing anybody's life, though. Little Miss Sunshine was good. It wasn't the best indie movie I've ever seen in the world. You know,
I think in a year where there wasn't a lot of stuff, you know, this stood out because I hadn't seen a lot of movies like this year, and I really enjoyed it. And it was a very nice story, like beginning, middle, and end. It fit. It works as a package. It was a little simplistic, really.
Yeah, it was very simple.
You know, but at the same, it was really funny.
There were good moments.
There was really great moments. And I do think it's the same thing with Garden State. Like, you walked out of Garden State and you were like, oh, that was awesome. They were speaking to me. It was whatever. Same thing with this movie. But then you go back later and you don't really want to watch Garden State again for some reason.
Oh, I love Garden State. Yeah, I love
it.
Yeah. No, I walked out a little bit of the sunshine going, oh, that was good.
I dug it. But I don't feel like it's going to hold up for me.
Let's talk about Stranger Than Fiction. Then.
Yeah, well, conversely, I mean, like, I draw the comparison. I'm the only one out of the three of us who saw Stranger Than Fiction, right?
Yes.
And that was, I became aware of it when Connor sent the trailer, he emailed the trailer out to the three of us, and we all seemed really interested
Will
in
Ferrell,
it.
Will Ferrell.
Emma Thompson. Dustin Hoffman, and Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Right.
And just real quick plot synopsis, and I'm not giving anything away, Will Ferrell plays a boring IRS agent. And he starts to hear a voice, and it's Emma Thompson's voice, who happens to be a writer who's in the process of writing a book about Will Ferrell. And she's narrating his life, and she thinks she's writing a book, but it's actually a real person. And her book is going to have the character, quote unquote, die. But Will Ferrell is the real person, and he doesn't want to die. And so he tries to figure out, he goes to see a psychiatrist, he thinks he's schizophrenic, but he's like, no, I'm not schizophrenic. So he goes to see Dustin Hoffman, who plays a literature professor, and he tries to help him to figure out what kind of story he's in. And then he meets Maggie Gyllenhaal, and it becomes a love story. But what was great about it was that the feeling, that Little Miss Sunshine was described as you walk out like a feel-good movie, like you walk out feeling great and optimistic. Mm-hmm. Stranger Than Fiction gave me chills at times because it was so honest. And it was so, like, and walking out of it, I never felt more optimistic or anything. Like, it really moved me. I mean, it was really, because he basically, Will Ferrell's character goes through this transformation of solitude, boring, lonely life, to love, to living, to really knowing what it's like to live. And it's interesting, the guy who directed it, there was really great use of visual effects, like, because he's an IRS agent, so one of the jokes was how he counts. So he's like counting the number of brush strokes while he's brushing his teeth, and he counts the number of steps to the bus thing. They did this great thing with graphics where they overlaid it. So there's actually graphics of the toothbrush in his mouth, count and a counter, and like they laid out a map of his steps to count the steps. Like a really interesting use, a different use of it. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting in the first half of the movie, when it's boring, his life is boring and very, like, you know, kind of plain. All of the sets and all the shots are very square, very kind of rectangle. And once he meets Maggie Gyllenhaal and starts to fall in love and becomes into this real life, it becomes rounded. Like in her, she's a baker, she has a bakery. The window of her store is a circle. Like, it's these little visual touches that make.
So
you,
she's a hobbit?
No, but it was just really, really well done. If you ask me, that, I mean, I don't know if it was an indie movie or not, but it was definitely under the radar, and it blew Little Miss Sunshine away. If I had to compare those two, mm-hmm. And it, by the way, it made me fall in love with Maggie Gyllenhaal. Like, she was.
You didn't like her before, right?
I didn't like her before at all. Yeah, and then like I was like, oh my god, I was like, yeah, it was just awesome. It was, and it was just honest. It was real, and you know, and that's something I like. I like sincerity. I like, mm-hmm. you know, kind of that feeling. but it blew me away. I totally didn't. I saw it by myself in Chicago. I was like in like a 4 o'clock movie.
He wrote us an email.
A long one.
This is the greatest thing ever. And he doesn't usually do that.
And which immediately turned Josh off.
Yeah, I did. We have very different tastes sometimes.
But it was really good. It was really, really good. So
I don't not believe you, but I have to see it first.
Yeah, yeah. I strongly encourage
it. I will say I was going to see it, but it came out while I was moving across the country, and that missed a lot of stuff.
No, I don't go to movies. It came out in November. Yeah. I saw it in Chicago in November.
Yeah. November?
Yeah.
It's recent.
Yeah,
you're right.
But
cut that part. One thing that I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if Connor saw it, but Ron did, saw Clerks 2.
Yes.
You both saw it together.
Because we both live in New York, and so we do things. And now that you're here, you can come to the movies with us.
If I'm free.
We all saw Borat. We're not going to talk about that, but we saw it. So that
we have to.
No, whatever. It's Borat. It doesn't have to be talked about again.
It's fantastic.
Not so much.
Really?
No, I'm joking. When he made
all right, Clerks 2.
Clerks 2.
Josh, you have a strong opinion about it.
Well, you watched it on DVD.
I did. I saw it.
And we actually saw it in the theater.
I was so, like, I was just watching this, and I just felt like, you never have a really good friend in high school, and then you go back, and he's doing the same thing that he was doing then, like in Garden State. But I was just like, I felt bad for Kevin Smith. Not because he was doing the same thing that he'd always been doing, but because he said quite emphatically that I'm done with all these, and then he still went back.
Yeah, well,
you know, like the overall feeling I had to it, there was funny bits, don't get me wrong. Like, he's a funny guy, he writes well, but I really started to think that this is all he can do. And second of all, everybody just felt way too old in that movie. And Rosario Dawson came off as the best actor in the world because Brian O'Halloran is not.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like, we walked out of it and I enjoyed it. I mean, I had a good time at it.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know, there were things that made me laugh about it, but I agree. Like
I think we gave it like a solid C.
I would give like a B minus or so. But like, I think that he should have kept it in black and white. And he should have kept it in 60mm because
soft focus.
Exactly, because Brian O'Halloran and Jeff Anderson need it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the point that you made about Rosario Dawson is—I was going to say Rosie O'Donnell. Rosario Dawson is absolutely correct. Like, we walked out of that movie, and remember, I was like, "She was great. She's gorgeous. She's such a good actress." Da, da, da. And then I was like, "Wait a minute, is she just looking like she's a good actress because everyone was so bad around her?"
She is actually really good.
I don't know if she's really
25th Hour.
I haven't seen that.
She's a good actress, but yeah. I think overall, just the feeling is that it just shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now it's hard because if this is a cover story, I'll give him all the credit because he's got the sympathy for me, but he claims that he promised Muse that if Muse got clean, they'd make another movie.
And can I just say that Muse, it's ridiculous to say he's a better actor now than he used to be, but he's a much better actor. Yeah,
best scene of the movie is the Goodbye Horses, Silence of the Lambs scene.
You know what?
I was dying.
That you have a thing for that.
Yes, well, not Mangina. Just me. I'm not alone.
No, that was probably the best.
Yes. No, but he, like, ooh. You've heard all those stories about him, like, you can tell how he used to be shy, and now, like, he's not, and I know that, like, he's clean now, and he's off heroin, so you feel better about it, but at the same time, like, Kevin Smith's supposed to be a better director now, and he's gotten is really hacky.
My
example of that is the scene they go up on the roof to learn how to dance,
and
there is... I could fall in love with her from watching her dance on the rooftop too. Geez. But they did a slow push into Brian O'Halloran sitting there with fucking doe eyes, and I was just like, "Oh, I know you have a hard on for John Hughes, but this is ridiculous."
Well, that's why I don't know how much is Smith versus the guy, the DP who was the guy who did Clerks. So I'm not sure if he's actually any good. But yeah, I mean,
just didn't have any of the nihilism that made us love Clerks.
Well, that's the thing is that like what I think
he's gotten so soft in his own
and,
way.
And I understand that.
No, he shouldn't make the movie.
What I think is that he turned a corner. I think with Dogma, where he invented this little universe that no longer like Clerks and Mallrats could exist in our universe. Like that was believable, was plausible.
Not
even Chasing Amy.
Mallrats was
well, but even Chasing Amy, you know. But at Dogma, when he started introducing the movie shit and Jay and Silent Bob, it no longer felt... It felt like this parody-esque universe. Mm-hmm. And it felt separated.
Yeah, that's true.
And Clerks 2 was deeply planted
in that.
Well,
that was Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back put that over the edge.
Right, yes, exactly.
Jay and Silent Bob Strikes Back was the ending.
It should have been.
And listen, I watched that movie and I was like, aha, it's stupid and it's funny and it's great. And the joke went on too long.
That said, Clerks 2 DVD is still on my Christmas list. That's the last word this year. I mean, I enjoyed it. At some points made me laugh. And you're right. I agree with you. It's kind of like, oh, that's too bad. But whatever.
You buy everything.
No, I don't.
My DVD buying has gone way down.
Yeah.
Now,
so oh yeah, mine too. But I'm more discerning. But like the thing, I mean, like it was enjoyable. It was, you know, like it wasn't awful. So.
I guess I'll bitch about a movie really quick. I want to the worst, most disappointing movie that I saw this year. And I don't think either of you two saw it because either you weren't going to or I warned.
I really
away
wanted
from
to,
it.
And then you ruined it for me. No, I'm joking.
Emilio Estevez is Bobby.
Yeah.
By the way, it's
supposed
sounds
to be an Oscar
contender. And it fucking well shouldn't be. I've never seen a movie that like had so much talent in it and was so like Estevez just doesn't have the chops for this.
Wow.
I mean, basically, like it was a lot of platitudes and a lot of big general characters playing these things and doing speeches and saying scenes. And the most interesting part of the movie by far were the archival clips of Bobby Kennedy speaking.
Which is ironic, because you could just go to work and watch those, because you
they're
work for a news footage company.
They're actually owned by CBS.
Oh.
But I just, like, me and my wife both walked out of the movie just like, what a waste of our time that was. It was like, it was a perfect example of a Hollywood pet project gone wrong. Like, yeah. Listen, he had the passion behind it and the whole thing, and he was trying to say something about... It was just so ham-fisted, and he just did not have the skill to pull it off, and it was not worth the time. I'd have rather seen a documentary on that day. Easily.
I can guarantee you that when I rent it, I will enjoy it.
Because you've got a hard on for the Kennedys.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So
no, I do too. Listen,
not like him.
But I came home, though, and I watched 13 Days again, and I watched JFK again, and I was like, oh, that's good.
13 Days is the Costner one, right?
Yeah, it's very good.
Awesome.
It's a great movie.
It's really Costner. Good. Although
he's a supporting character.
Yeah, yeah, he
not
is.
Not apparent, doesn't matter. Tainted, Dance of the Wolves.
Dance of the Wolves is a great movie.
Fuck you. Fucking shouldn't have won.
It was a great movie.
I wanted to watch it. I watched the trailer for it, and I thought, that's a movie that's been made for me.
Dance
because
of the
I
Wolves? Oh, we're sorry, we're talking about Dance of the Wolves.
I
remember seeing
Bobby
the trailer, and I thought the same thing.
Oh, that's the kind of movie. I love period pieces. I love American history. And, it has nothing to do with that, is the thing.
Yeah, well...
Fucking Ashton Kutcher's in it.
Yeah, you see, that's a problem.
It was a Hollywood, yeah. like let's see who else we can invite.
It's a circle jerk.
It was a circle jerk, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So wow, this is a really trashy episode.
Yeah.
Let's bring it down a notch and talk about something a little more real. An Inconvenient Truth.
Not a lot of documentaries this year.
Not a lot of documentaries.
I actually watched this today.
Okay. Because we were going to talk about it, or
no? Just happened
oh, just
to
happened
pop
to
up in the Netflix today.
I saw it this summer in the theater. And now
that also caused another long email from
the
you.
Other
did it,
email.
Did it really?
You sent two emails this year. One was Stranger Than Fiction. The other was Inconvenient Truth.
Really?
And really, like, you guys don't know Ron at home. He sent us an email about an Al Gore movie on global warming, and I nearly fell over.
Did I? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you're a right winger, but compared to me and Connor, you are farther along the spectrum than we are.
I don't understand how I have this reputation of being. Anyway,
because,
by the way. We're getting political now. I if Al Gore had made this movie in 2000, he would have won the presidential election. I swear to God. This movie was, I mean, it was done so well.
He couldn't have made this movie.
No,
losing freed him to be this, the man.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly. He had to have lost that to become the person who made this.
Right, and the thing is that, for those of you who don't know, it's the documentary about global warming. With layered in bits about Al Gore's life.
Which I've heard are the bad parts.
I could have done with that. I could
have
done with that.
But they're actually fairly competent metaphors. And what he's doing is trying to say, like, I'm not going to give anything away by this.
It's the personal. Like,
what he says
we're
is,
living
like,
on this planet.
He almost lost his son. And that made him realize that, you know, you can lose things that you take for granted. So every time somebody says, oh, it's the planet, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
You could lose, and like I get that,
right.
You know.
But I thought the presentation itself, his global warming presentation, was fantastic.
Yep,
the man is funny. He explained it in a way that an idiot could understand, and the science makes sense, and it adds up, and it just packed. And you walk out of that movie, and what's great was the end credits. The end credits were the coup de grace of the movie, because they walk out. They were designed so well.
C'est le coup de grâce.
Coup de grâce. They were designed so well, and the animation was so well, and it ends with. Okay, now you get up and go tell somebody to see this movie. You get up and you do something. And it was, I mean, I ran out of the movie to write that email,
yeah.
Which I don't remember.
You
writing,
did it.
But I did it, yeah.
And
I did my part.
And one of the other things, I actually avoided seeing this movie for a while. I really wanted to, but I was
apparently
like...
Apparently, if I suggest something, you avoid it.
No,
that's
I didn't
the
avoid it.
That's
the theme I'm seeing.
I didn't avoid it for that. I avoided it because it was one of those things like, you know when like Schindler's List came out and you're like, I know I have to see it,
yeah.
But I don't really want to feel bad. Right. And one of the things about this movie is that I watched and I walked, I didn't feel bad.
Right. No, yeah,
at the end, he goes, we can fix this.
Yeah.
We have the technology to fix it. It's absolutely fixable. He also, he's Al Gore, so obviously this is, there are people who like him and people who don't.
Right. However, I was in the don't like him camp.
I know. Yeah. This is what I'm talking about.
About.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But it's not a partisan argument.
No.
And he also goes on to very compellingly make the case that there are people out there who say that the science isn't behind this. The science is behind
this.
Yeah, totally. You can't deny that. People who aren't, like, he very...
Oh, we're going to get letters.
And that's fine. Well, listen, don't argue with us. Watch the movie and have your own opinion.
Somebody
but you should, you should watch the movie.
Yeah, no, you have to watch the movie. And honestly,
if you can watch the movie and still say it's all BS, then... You know, that is your opinion.
And
to
you
do.
And Carl Everett can go sit somewhere else and live in your little bubble of a world.
But if nothing else, you've got to appreciate the effort that went into it, and it's very heartfelt.
Oh, it was great. It was great.
And you don't walk out feeling like, oh, we're fucked. And I've seen other movies like this where you walk out feeling, oh, I'm fucked.
Right. No, it was optimistic.
X-Men 3, wasn't that the
Yeah, exactly. It was optimistic.
I was thinking of the corporation.
It was optimistic and it was proactive, and there's a very cute girl in the audience at the very beginning.
Let's talk about a movie I've seen.
Okay.
Shall we?
Yeah.
I'm feeling left out. Hollywood Land.
This was while I was moving.
Yes, this is the one. I'm glad. I wasn't sure if I was going to see this in the theater. And
then Ron and I went on another movie date and saw Hollywood Land. This is apparently the theme of the show.
Connor and I have an announcement to make. No,
we saw the next one on the list together, too.
We did. No, but there
first
was a girl.
Global
we
went with
there was a girl at that one, too. We went to Carrie one
that's
a
true.
Bit, yeah.
That's true. It was a buffer. It was a female
yeah.
buffer.
But no, but Hollywood, if I believe I remember correctly,
she was your she-beard.
It was one of those summer nights. It was like, what are you doing? I don't know. What are you doing? And we're just like, let's go to the movie.
The sky was electric and your skin was glistening.
And the right amount of lube, and it was just... No, but anyway...
We had nothing to do. We had nothing to do. Let's go see Hollywoodland.
Yeah, it's comics, it's Superman, and you posted on the site about it.
Yeah, I loved this movie.
Why did you love it?
Well, for a lot of reasons.
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck was really good in it.
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing that when you say that sentence, Ben Affleck was good?
Yeah.
People forget that he's a somewhat capable actor.
He is. He was a great George Reeves. He was great. That one shot, the 8 millimeter.
Well, let's just give him a really quick. Yeah. The story is the story of George Reeves. George Reeves, who played Superman in the 1950s TV show, and he died under mysterious circumstances. Officially ruled suicide.
I hope it's not Nazis. I'm so sick. Look at him, Kevin Smith here.
I know you are.
Ben Affleck played George Reeves, and he was fantastic as the failed actor who couldn't get any respect in the industry and was sort of trapped in his own career of his own making. And it was almost you could tell. I think he drew in a lot of his own professional pain to do it.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really.
Adrian Brody is a private investigator investigating the suicide murder. Very kind of a L.A. Confidential, kind of noir, kind of, you know, yeah. kind of, but it's true. What I love is that it was true.
Well, I love real, true crime, so that was one thing. I find this case fascinating. I have for years, so, and I like the aspect of the old Hollywood where the studios ran the town, and you couldn't...
Hoskins was great as the head of MGM.
The evil MGM head who could very conceivably have had George Reeves killed.
What I found really interesting was that the movie brings about several of the different theories, but never pushes one. It gives equal time to each of the theories.
Three theories.
Three solid theories.
That's hard to do, because if they don't tell you what it is, sometimes you feel like you haven't...
Right, and like I'm ready for like them to say, okay, but you know, it was kind of like Clue. Like, it could have happened this way. You know, but it really happened this way. But you ended like, you know, I don't know what happened. And you feel Adrian Brody is the private investigator who's like, it could have gone any way. Like, I don't know. Like, we'll never know. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting, because we really never will know. So.
Right, I mean, you can certainly...
Are any of those three ways the official version?
The official version, he killed himself.
Yeah, it was a suicide. Then he went up. It was a party at his house, and he went upstairs in the bedroom and shot himself.
He shot himself
accidentally.
Yeah.
After a struggle for the gun with his
wife or fiance at the time.
And the third one is MGM had him killed.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that there were bullet holes in the floor and in the ceiling. And at Adrian Brody's point is like, who tries to shoot himself misses and then tries again. You know what I mean? Like that. Like there was a lot of things that each theory kind of fell apart a little. So it's like, fuck.
Well, his nose may have hit the trigger guard.
Anyway,
I really like
it. But it was a really good noir film.
The nose, I guess.
Yeah, probably.
He was good. He was an Italian guy. All right, the last movie I want to talk about, you, Josh, didn't see, right?
No, because you two went on another date to this
No, look, there was a girl at this one. It was a hangout.
Whatever.
It was a threesome.
Nice. It was the last...
So you guys... Oh my God, that's even worse.
It was The Last Kiss, starring Zach Braff, or as what I called it when I saw the trailer, apparently Garden State 2.
Post-grad.
Yeah. Great poster, though. Great design of the poster. But
Zach Braff is a man entering his 30s. He's engaged to this really great girl.
No, they weren't engaged. She got pregnant.
She got pregnant, but everyone else, the feeling was they were going to... The pressure was on to get engaged.
Exactly, yep.
His friends were all... in various stages of relationships. One was married, one was like the perennial bachelor, one was marriage. He just was getting married, right? And then Zach Braff freaks out and starts dating Rachel Bilson, who's a college student, because...
Well, no, he doesn't date her. He goes out with her once and then sleeps with her. And
right. Well, it takes place on 2 days, so whatever. Yeah. It hit me hard because it's a very, you're 29,
it's a getting
about
old.
To be 30, and this is you freak out.
One of Zach Braff's little inspirational speeches that happened with indie rock in the background was, you know, not having any more surprises in your life.
Yeah, you get to a point where your life is predictable. Very predictable.
Which I think, you know, as we grow older, we all wrestle with that, and that's kind of, it was very relatable. I thought all in all it was like a B+. It was really good. The music, of course, was really good. I thought the acting was really good. I just felt as if the ending was just a little. It didn't end for me. It ended because they ran out of film, like that kind of ending. You know, like, well, we're at an hour and a half. Let's wrap this up. You know, like,
we're out of money. So, yeah.
But wrap this up. But Tom Wilkinson and Blythe Danner were the parents of his girlfriend, and they were having their own problems, and that was really good. Like it was a lot of good mirroring of storytelling. It was good. It was nice. So I liked it. It's nice.
Yes.
So it's nice.
Well,
wait, that's boring. No.
So I mean, all in all, I mean, for me, I mean, I saw 14 or so movies in the you know, I don't know which ones I saw in the theater versus DVDs, but I mean, it was an okay year for movies. I mean, that's, you know, no complaints.
I will say that this year is as I've said before, this is my theater going is going way down.
Right.
Because the theater experience is not what it used to be, yet my home theater experience is much more than it used to be.
I think the theater experience is the same. I think you're not what it used to be.
Possibly. No.
Like going to the movies. I still love it.
It's
so.
The phones thing, man. I can't deal with it anymore.
Yeah, but, you know.
The answering.
But honestly, I didn't have any real bad theater experiences this year.
No.
Except for maybe Borat. That was the closest.
I have horrible luck. Like, if there is a baby with Tourette's, it's like next to me.
Well,
every time.
I mean, the thing is that like what I try to do is like Superman. We went opening night.
The event
and
the movies
audience,
are different.
Yeah, the audience is there focused on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And so the other movies, I try to go on off hours or the smaller theaters or that sort of thing to minimize the rabble. Let's just say
you can go to smaller theaters.
You can go too.
I can leave the thing. Small. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Doesn't matter because I'll watch them at home now. I don't care.
That's a good argument too. I mean, like, I've been watching a lot of movies. I just watched Thank You for Smoking, which came out earlier in the year at home, and that was. I mean, I love my speakers. I love.
Did
my
you
theater.
Like that?
I liked it. I did.
I thought
I gave it a B+. I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
I mean, but I thought it was funny.
It was
a
clever.
Solid movie.
Yeah, it was. I love Aaron Eckhart. I love Aaron Eckhart. So,
which is odd from you.
Why?
I don't know. It just seems odd.
I loved In the Company of Men. It was a great movie. It was a good movie.
God.
It was hysterical. When they make fun of the deaf girl for sounding like a dolphin.
I've never seen it.
Oh, you never saw it? Oh my God, you've got to see it. Oh, it's really good. Good indie movie.
Neil LaBute.
Yeah. That guy's too harsh for me.
He hates
me. Oh yeah, misogynist. Like I know. Now I want to say, like, I'm not a misogynist. Okay. I'm just saying that I can, you know, like it was.
I can relate.
Listen, I'm not saying that it's okay, but I understand why he beat her.
No, there's no beating. It's just anyway. So.
Just emotional abuse.
Yeah, exactly. We'd like to thank GeekArmor.com for sponsoring this all-media year-end roundup. GeekArmor.com is your spot on the web for t-shirts with the geek in mind. They got a lot of comic book t-shirts and video game and science fiction and movie and TV show t-shirts.
Perfect for the show.
It's perfect for the show, actually.
A healthy amount of snark in these t-shirts?
Yes, there are snark in these
t-shirts. A tasteful snark?
Yes.
Okay.
So head over to GeekArmor.com and be sure to tell them that iFanboy sent you.
All right, so all right. What do we think we spent the most time on this year? I think it's got to be TV viewing.
Yes and no.
No?
I'm down on TV. This year, this is the first year I saw a downtrend on TV.
I watch more TV now than I used to.
You might be down, but I think you're still watching more than anything else.
Well, I watch, I do probably watch more than anything. But
I blame the two of you for all the TV I watch.
What's happened to me is that I've become very selective. Like, I DVR everything, and I don't watch it when it's on. I time shift. So the days of me sitting in front of the couch flipping are long gone. I don't do that ever.
Mine have been gone.
I love it.
The Kilpatrick family crest has a remote control and a shield.
Yeah, and the plus and minus buttons are worn off.
Yeah, exactly. Your family flips like no family I've ever seen before.
I love flipping.
Like, and if you're over there watching something,
it's maddening.
It's awful because
I love it. It's fun. It's like a roller coaster.
It drives me crazy.
Unless
but the thing
Texas
is,
football.
The way that I watch TV now is
let's just talk about Connor for the rest of
the show. If a show starts at 9, I will do whatever I want until 9:20, and then I will come back and watch it. I'm sorry, advertisers. And when we got together this year to watch some shows on Monday nights, and we had to be like, no, let's not start watching it yet.
Right. Well, yeah, I think that's it. I mean, who wants to watch commercials?
I know.
Unless it's the Geico Caveman commercials, which I'll watch. I'll stop and watch.
You know what's funny is I realize I do watch commercials because if I see something that catches my eye as I'm going through,
go back.
I'll watch a good commercial.
So,
yeah.
You know, it's not like we don't watch commercials
anymore.
So here's
a question for you. So? If there was a channel that showed 48 minutes commercial-free, and then at the end of it there were 12 minutes of good commercials, or if there was a channel of just commercials, but they were all good quality commercials, would you watch that?
I would.
I'd probably dip into the channel every now and then.
In the old days of non-time shifting, then I definitely would have. Just so there's a trailer channel.
Yeah.
Or there's a show
that shows
trailers on HD.
I love the trailer channel.
And I'd watch that.
Yeah.
So, I don't see why not, but...
I think they just need to make good commercials.
Yeah.
Like that one commercial, the cell phone with the five, with the guy's girlfriend's and his friend's phone. That commercial is hysterical.
Or the ones with the Volkswagen commercials with the guitar players.
Yeah, or the Volkswagen commercial, the scary one with the car crashes that freak me out every time. I watch that every time.
Every Volkswagen commercial this year has been awesome, by the way.
Yeah.
The Fast.
Oh, those were great.
And then the Carl Hungus.
Yeah.
I don't know what his real name is.
The Fast commercials that were those were on during the Olympics. Those are fantastic. Oh, I love those. Those are
so
awesome.
Good, David.
So, but
we didn't even have commercials in here, but we just did it. That's the kind of treatment we're giving you here.
So let's talk about TV.
Oh.
So let's get it out of the way.
The show Josh never stops talking about.
That he compares every comic book to.
Oh. If you guys, you are watching The Wire.
Yeah, but I'm only the first season I've seen.
I know, but you just got the second one today, and I'm guarantee you're gonna be through that in a couple
of
minutes.
No, I don't doubt the quality. I know the quality. It's just a joke because you mention it a lot.
I do. I love it. You read everywhere that it's the best show on TV.
The Wire.
I'm watching The Wire
on HBO.
Yeah, on HBO. They just finished up the fourth season, and I'm just like, I have to wait for the fifth. It's driving me crazy. The show's the same every time with the first four or five episodes of it. You don't really know what it's about, and then it builds and it builds and it builds, and all of a sudden it gels, and the end, you know, the back half of the season is amazing, and this season was no different, and I thought I was like, maybe this will be the one that drops it, because it was about something completely different than the previous ones had been about. They focused on kids and schools, and it's about Baltimore, basically, which doesn't sound very interesting, but it's this...
If you've ever been there, it's not.
It's this really interesting microcosm that sort of started... He started being fascinated with it when he wrote Homicide, David Simon, the showrunner and creator. And it's just so damn well done. It's like, I love reading novels that go on, and that's what it's like. It feels like a novel. I just watched the first season again, or I'm almost at the end of it, and it's all connected to the stuff that's going on now. It's just so craftily well done. And I've had emails from people from the site who've heard me talk about it and have started watching it because of this, and they've all been hooked too.
Oh, really? It's great. It's a great...
People write directly and say it?
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Definitely.
I never heard that until just now. More
than one.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Okay. It's a great, great show from what I've seen.
I mean, I don't think there's a show on that I'm more... sort of subtly engrossed by. Like, I forget, and then every time I watch it, I was like, the best thing ever. Anyway. So,
what about the show that, Josh, you find hysterical that all three of us watch?
Last year, I was like, I don't know what you're talking about, when they started talking about Grey's Anatomy.
Now, just to give the background, I started watching Grey's Anatomy when it first started, because I used to watch Boston Legal, and it took Boston Legal's time slot for 6 episodes, and it was the chick from Old School, and the Asian woman who looks like she walked into
Sandra
a wall. And Patrick Dempsey.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is good. And it was good. It was really, really good. And then it all blew up. And now...
That was Ron saying,
I was there before it was
right.
cool.
Is that, yeah.
yeah.
Well, let's be fair,
and 9 million other people...
Yeah.
It's not like it was you.
No, but my barometer...
It's not an indie album. It's an ABC drama.
But my barometer is that this is season 3, and this is the first season where I have my mom calling me the next day going, did you watch Grey's Anatomy? And that's okay. All right, mom's on board. I need to back away now. No, but I haven't backed away, and it's been pretty good.
I thought this has been the least good. I was going to say worst, but that worst implies it was bad.
But in a good or bad way?
It was this is the weakest season so far.
The reason that I started watching it was because in summer reruns, my wife was watching it and was like, "You have to watch it." And I've been watching through ER basically, and so I was like,
"Which is a crime that you never watch." I mean, I'm so glad you caught up.
I'm on like season four, and I just finished season four. But I was watching that, and I was just like, I'm not going to like that. That's stupid. And the first, and so it was on in reruns. They were playing the second season again, and Lindsay was like, "You have to see the season finale for two." And I was like, whatever, I'll watch it. And then so she starts watching
it. I thought the season finale for one was better than the season finale for two.
I didn't see it. I've only seen the second season.
Okay.
But I'm watching through it, and like very, very slowly. I'd say three or four or five episodes in, I'm still going, it's no ER. Like, and that's what I kept doing. And I was so reluctant. And then like I got to the end when some of the, the narrative, you know, the overall story stuff starts picking up more. And I was really fascinated that I thought what's her name, the blonde chick, Katherine Heigl, surprisingly good actor.
Yeah,
and she was a model or something like that, and I was like, oh, she's not gonna be good. And I was like, wow, she actually is good. I was shocked.
The thing about the show, and I see where you're saying where you think it's the weakest of the three.
I also agree with that.
But they've taken a lot of but it's one of those things, like, I don't like what's happened, but I know the defense is that, you know, in order to make the characters grow, you've got to give them challenges.
They've broken the hell down of the characters.
Yeah, and I don't like the fact that, like, I don't like what happened with the blonde, with Izzy, and I don't like what happened with Burke, and I don't like, I don't like it, but I'm still engrossed by it because I'm
too much moping, too much moping around, too much of the main character who I hate.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's gotten bad, Meredith.
I hate Meredith.
Ellen Pompeo, she's gotten bad. Her hair is awful this year.
Well, the thing is,
I cannot stand her hair.
What am I talking about her hair?
I don't know.
But the thing is that what I think is its strength is that...
Care about her problems.
What I think it's its strength is that it's a great ensemble show.
No, let me ask you, though.
And then
when she had to choose between Robin and the pizza guy...
Robin.
I mean, you were like, I don't know who she should
I love.
I did not care.
Patrick Dempsey, by the way. I love Patrick Dempsey. Yeah. I'm very pro Patrick Dempsey.
My wife's like, he's so hot, and I was like, he really is. I'm not going to kid with you.
Not that he's hot. I'm like, wow, I forgot he actually was pretty. He's pretty good.
He's a cool dude, though.
I love the chief, the older doctor. He's great.
For me, the strongest character on the show, especially this year, has been Bailey.
She's always been good. Yeah,
I know, but like that doesn't normally happen. Is what I'm saying. And
she was actually particularly strong season one.
Season one plays to my 6-episode theory, which I could talk about during the OC or not. But I believe England BBC has it right with 6-episode seasons. Like that first season of the OC was the first 6 episodes was one of the best runs of 6 episodes. Mm-hmm. The first 6 episodes of Grey's Anatomy is a great run of 6 episodes.
They usually do 8.
Yeah, season 6.
In the UK. Right. Yeah, but I'm saying that early. Well, no, in the OC's case, they did that before the fall. For the season though, they did 6 in the summer,
sure.
And those little pockets of greatness in the short period, and I think the longer season is starting to hurt the
narrative.
Not
the case with the U.S. office, though.
True. Well, yes and no. I mean, it depends, because you could... I don't know. I mean, I'm talking more about the dramas. They
sure,
the
okay,
drama,
that's
so,
fine.
Yeah. But,
I'm still watching it. I've been given the analogy that... Whereas something like ER or The West Wing is like it's a full meal. No. Grey's Anatomy is like sweet candy that you just keep eating.
Yeah,
it really, and it kind of is. But it's good. It's well done.
I can just see a point where I'm going to stop watching. Like I get to points with shows where I start getting annoyed with them, but I'll stick with it for a while, and then the annoyance level reaches a point where I just say forget it. And that's happened to a lot of shows.
Fair enough.
It is
shows I've loved, like West Wing. I stopped with.
Well,
Gilmore Girls.
I don't get me started.
There's a very real reason for stopping watching The West Wing.
It happens.
Heinberg clearly having something to do with the show this season.
Out of nowhere, there's a comic book subplot. I was like, oh, come on. I'm like, Heinberg.
Can I say one thing? This is like, what's his name? The little Weasley dude?
Not George. Weasley.
George, right, George. It comes out in the middle of the season that he's in real life, he's gay, and I'm like, this makes sense because he's got no chemistry with any of those women,
right, yeah,
and that is one of the clear things.
Even the realistic girl.
I mean, none at all.
They're gonna get married.
Ooh, spoiler.
Oh no.
Yeah, they are. So, all right. So, another big hit that could be a falling star, or maybe not.
Connor doesn't agree.
ABC's Lost.
I still love that show every week. I'm getting to the point where I feel like I'm watching Twin Peaks again, where nobody but me understands the show anymore.
And you just get everything.
And I just understand it, and I love it, and everyone else can screw off.
Because we're doing 2006, so it's the end of last season, the beginning of this season. So last season there was a lot of venom around the number of repeats and the lack of continuous episodes. So this season they did the 8 episodes in straight in a row, Good move, taking a bad month move? Off. Good
I
move,
don't,
bad move? I say good move.
Good move and good move and concept. They shouldn't have taken the whatever they're taking 2 months off.
Well, they're trying to shorten that now. From
yeah,
what
they're bringing it back.
They should do the 24 model. We said this last year. We should say that again. Start them in January, run it through May.
Yep.
Don't even bother. You don't need October through.
Are you frustrated by the lack of finding things out, or the fact that every time you find something out, there's a new question, and like,
that brings me back for more.
I am. Yeah. I really got frustrated this year. One thing that killed off Mr. Echo, which I know was all sorts of reasons. He was one of my favorite characters.
Right, but he chose to go.
Yeah, no, and I know that's fine, but I really liked him, and I felt that they dwelt. I don't know, on so many other people who are not the people who I wanted to be watching, which is it's a preference thing, but like I like the people who we've already met, and I felt like we still had so much more to do with them, but we had to spend so much time on everybody else.
Yeah, well, my big criticism of the season this year, I'm with Connor, where I'm tuning every week, I'm still hooked.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah, I'm nowhere near done, like I love it. My only criticism of the new season was, I know in concept that like we don't need to. We have an island of 40 people. We can add new characters whenever we want. Except the way they handled introducing the new characters this season was just awful. All of a sudden, there's two people you never saw before. They're like,
camera pans over.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awful.
It was rough. It was shaky. You
that
know
was
I mean?
Ham-fisted, like, but still, yeah. I mean, the concept is
do we? Do, you know what's funny is that, okay, it was just announced Brian K. Vaughan is now going to be writer on the show. People are like, I can't wait to see it. Do you think you'll actually notice him?
No.
I don't know. Did you notice Deanie?
No.
No. But I doubt.
Wait, he's writing. He's not on the show.
He's writing.
But Deanie was only there for 1 year.
Or
once,
2 years.
Once, was he?
Yeah, he was in the second season.
I didn't feel like. I don't think I saw an episode that was written by him.
No, but the thing is that. No, there were episodes written by him in the first season. Really? And it was less, honestly, when Deanie was involved in Lost. I remember when Lost first started, people at work I was telling about it and stuff like that. And I was saying there's a comic book writer, and then Jeff Loeb came on. I'm like, comic book writers are involved, and the episodes feel like a comic book where it's a self-contained story, but it's still serialized and it's keeping the story going. And you really got that feeling. When Deanie left, I felt as if that left with him. And so maybe Vaughn can bring that element back.
It's possible.
It's more of an editing standpoint.
But I think if you get to one of the episodes where you see at the beginning, like this, you know, written by Brian K. Vaughan, I'm wondering if you'll feel that.
Yeah.
Because there are some things, we're going to get to this, but when
if all the men suddenly die. that'll be an indicator.
or if Locke gains the ability to talk to trees.
Right.
Okay. I think when we're going to get to Galactica in a little bit, but like when Mark Verheiden, who also writes for comics, writes it, I notice those episodes. Those stand out for some reason.
Well, now NBC, you know, fired a shot across the bow at Lost with its new series Heroes, and it stole Jeff Loeb away from Lost, and and Heroes is the big phenomenon.
Shocking.
Shocking.
I'm still surprised it's so popular.
I remember the prediction that you guys, when you saw the pilot, or the version of the pilot.
My prediction
was it was going to last a few
13
episodes.
13 episodes.
13 or, you know, or maybe less and be gone off the air. Apparently, you were completely wrong.
Because
there is a big spoon and America is eating the show up with it.
Yes, I acknowledge. I underestimated you, America. And
why?
I'm proud. I'm glad.
I don't know. I don't actually.
It's the cheerleader.
I don't actually think the show is that
good.
I enjoy it. I have fun watching it. I think that it's added a whole lot. Gets added to the show is that I watch it with you guys. We have history with this kind of thing. We come to the website and we talk about it.
Yep.
But I'm not like, it's not like The Wire where I was like, oh my god, that's awesome.
Well, you're comparing shows to The Wire during the
show. Oh my god.
This is like fourth wall.
It's like, I'm trying to, in comic terms, it's like a Jeff Johns book as opposed to an Ed Brubaker book.
Well, no, well, here's my comparison to it, is that I feel as if Heroes is like a Lost light.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's there's a mystery, you don't really know what's going on, but it's not as deep or thick.
You think if
depth,
they took out Hero, know? if Hero wasn't in it,
the Japanese dude?
Yeah, do you think it would be this? You think like
no, I think he's the breakout star.
No, but what I'm saying is he the linchpin though?
No, I think Milo Ventimiglia is. No,
what I mean is, like, if he wasn't there, I don't think I'd care so much. Like I watch it for parts of it. I don't watch it for the whole thing.
Exactly, yeah.
I'm just mystified. I don't know why.
It's really good. I'm enjoying it.
I'm just mystified that it's so popular.
It's a B show, it feels like to me.
Yes, yeah. But it's good. I'm glad it's popular. But the thing is that as we watch more and more of it, I'm finding myself getting more and more annoyed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Ali Larder has got to go. Like, shut her mouth and go.
Her
husband has been awful.
Well, that kid
is awful.
Well, you know what's so weird is that that's the only storyline that seems to be not at all connected to the other.
Yeah.
Everyone else's storyline is connected, but theirs. And I would just like it to go away.
Yeah, just go stay over there.
Yep. I feel like this show's got a lot of potential.
It's all a little off. It feels like a syndicated show almost. Yeah. Like the actors aren't quite good looking enough.
It feels
quite
like
good
My Secret
enough.
Identity. Remember that show, yeah. Jerry O'Connell? Yeah. Syndicate. I like that. That's good.
Although we should keep reiterating that we do
watch it and enjoy it. My theory, though, that I came up with this week that I've been building over the whole season is that I think that it's being fucked with a lot. I think that the original vision is way different than what we have now. I think that when NBC realized they had something, they got their little grubby paws on it, and like Jeff Loeb and other people have changed it, and then NBC's changed it, and stuff like that as a ghost comes in the room.
That being said, the Kevin Riley, who's the head of president of programming, I mean, that guy's, he's got balls, and I will say that the show, I've seen stuff on the show like this year, we all have, we're like, they put that on the air?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, there's...
Well, it's also the only thing NBC has.
It's the most violentest thing ever. Yeah. It's the only thing NBC has, not that's good, but that's making popular. Money.
Well, that's
winning
right.
Time slot.
Right.
That's all that matters.
Because the next thing is the show that follows it.
Which is
my wet dream show right now.
The best show of the season.
Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
Yeah.
Did they drop the Sunset Strip part yet?
If they haven't, they should. They should drop it.
They should.
Just be Studio 60. It's fantastic.
And the thing is, listen, I'm watching The West Wing this year, too. It gets better.
Studio 60 was very rocky for the first three or four episodes.
Yeah,
I'll admit.
The second episode was the better one. Was better than the first.
We were all watching that at the same time too, and we would get out and we would go, "I liked it," and there was parts of it that were brilliant, but there was weak parts. And because in the beginning, the first couple episodes, the only thing that were interesting to watch was Matthew Perry and
Bradley Whitford.
And
who I love now.
Yeah, but since that time. Everybody, he's either the actors have come into their own, or Sorkin has come into his own and writing those different people. Like the whole thing is working now. I mean, like who saw Nate Cordry coming out of nowhere?
Breakout star, yeah.
I mean,
I think for me the hardest part was Josh knows this from watching the West Wing DVDs this year. Is the West Wing started and ran, and there was no learning curve except for the one bad character in the first season. But for the most part, it had its legs on the first episode and it ran full speed ahead till the end. So watching Studio 60, I'm expecting that same creative process, and it's a bit rockier.
It's kind of the same way as Sports Night. Sports Night was rocky to start, and then it got its legs towards the end of the first season.
But that's expected with any sort of creative endeavor, and if that's what it takes. But every consecutive episode was better than the last one, and the characters are getting rounded out, and I just...
The addition of Mark McKinney is genius.
Yeah, oh, man.
I hope he stays.
Anytime, and I like it when they use him sparingly, but the director...
Oh, the director! Oh, Timothy Busfield. Timothy Busfield. Yeah,
I just he brings that energy. I love this. This is my favorite new show.
It's great.
By far.
I see though why it's not popular.
Yeah.
It's very
I do too.
Clear.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I do too. Well, you had said something to me, Connor, about how when you watch The West Wing, it's really easy to get swept up in The West Wing because they were dealing with big, huge issues. And you said that that's what Sorkin does best.
Yeah, he does really important topics well, and from TV First Amendment issues aside, which they shoehorn in a lot, it's ultimately just television.
Yeah, and it's hard to get. But at the same time,
so when they do these sweeping, Sorkin speeches, which are great,
it's TV.
It's silly. The bottom line is they're talking about a TV show.
But, yeah, but I like TV.
But he's already
and
done.
That's why we love it.
I like TV more than politics.
But he's already. But the thing is, he's already done those issues on The West Wing. So like, what's he going to do? The UN show?
No, but
the way I see this is that this is Sorkin's big middle finger to the industry, and they're letting him do it.
Yeah.
Because he's retelling a lot of the Amanda Peet's character is directly. I mean, it's a lot like Jamie Tarsi's story at ABC.
Right.
I mean, and a lot of the stuff that's happening to the characters that are obviously Sorkin and Thomas Schlamme. Are happening on the show. Like, I feel as if he's kind of getting a little sweet revenge on the industry.
That having been said, I don't think it's going to come back.
I don't either, but if I get one nice season of it,
I think
this is...
I think it will come back. I'll go on the limb and I'll make a prediction that it will come back.
I'm surprised how heavy they stuck with it.
Because if anything, NBC is... I want to say it's like a fish like that's a little bit out of water. It's flailing, trying to get a drink, and this is their feather in the cap in terms of quality.
I think that this feels to me like NBC, which I believe is doing the worst in ratings overall.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're doing the same thing that NBC in the show is doing. They're like, well, we better put a bunch of good stuff on. A bunch of good stuff on, but isn't necessarily giving the best
right,
ratings.
Right, but in reality, they're talking with two mouths, because then at the same time they're saying, we're dropping a lot of show formats and going with game shows wherever we can.
Well, you got to pay the bills and then if they're going to do, sort of heavy bottom, light on the top, sort of like at the 8 o'clock hour they will show crap that gets ratings, and then at the 10 o'clock hour they will show really good TVs that will win them awards. I'm content with that. One just little tiny thing about the show that I wanted to just mention is that, like, at the beginning, you're watching Matthew Perry, and you're like, oh, he's just going to do Chandler.
Oh, no, he was
great. He's developed a real character out of it. He's different than Chandler. He can actually act. It's the same thing with Bradley Whitford. At first, I was like, yeah, this is like Josh Lyman. But he's not. He's something else.
I don't know why everybody gave Matthew Perry such a hard time, like the Friends stigma. I always
Because no
he
one's
good.
Ever seen him do anything else.
He was great in Growing Pains. You know, he was. He was really good. He died. His character died. It was really good.
That was 20 years ago.
And it's so? One episode.
No, he was on for a run. He was, what's her name?
Either way, what else
boyfriend?
Has he done? He did Sandy. One other. He did Fools Rush In, which Connor and I will watch every time it comes on HBO. But he played Chandler.
So I'm
he
hype.
Played. He yeah. played. He did the two.
The whole nine yards. Whole nine, or whatever.
Say he played Chandler on those. There's a reason that you would suspect.
No, but I just.
Although I knew because he has. Josh doesn't know. He did a. Two stints on the West Wing where he was not at all Chandler, so I knew
and he was good
he could
at
do it. Yeah.
Well,
so.
The other thing is, I think
I
some
surprised.
People, and I don't know if it's either that Aaron Sorkin can make people who are bad actors good, or if there's some people like Baldwin and Mamet,
right.
some people
yeah.
fit magically together.
Yeah,
maybe that's the case.
Jason
I mean,
Lee
like
and Kevin Smith.
Jason
yeah.
Lee and Kevin Smith, Rob Lowe and Aaron Sorkin. Like
yeah.
Rob Lowe sucks, but yeah. not on the West Wing. So yeah. I don't know.
He was great, and thank you for smoking, by the way. That's just,
yeah, I mean, yeah.
Was, yeah. But anyway, but he was playing the same character as he was in Wayne's World. Anyway, all right, so on the NBC kick, is it safe to say that the My Name is Earl office combo is our favorite hour of TV, though, from a comedy standpoint?
Comedy standpoint, yeah.
Like sitcom?
It might be the only
yeah,
hour.
Think,
the
yeah.
only hour of comedy I watch.
Yeah, me too.
Definitely.
They're just genius. It gets better.
Do you have a preference?
The Office.
It's got to give the edge to The Office.
I started off Earl because I want to mention like when The Office came out, I watched like two or three of them, and I was like, and I stopped watching it.
Right.
And then again in the summer, there was reruns, and I was like, oh, I'll try it a little bit because yeah. I was really annoyed at it at first. And over
well,
the summer,
because you couldn't get over the British. I mean, that
well, nobody
yeah,
could.
Yeah.
I did the same thing.
Oh, I could. No. I remember. I said it when it first came out. I'm like, it's actually pretty good.
It you wasn't know, though.
It was.
Not in the beginning.
No. Steve Carell didn't know what he was doing yet. Yeah. I think that was a big part
of it. I thought once they
it.
Embraced the writers and the background characters, mm-hmm. that's when it went over.
Yes, exactly.
Because
if that's
the
was
thing,
only the middle
the
of
thing
the season.
About The Office, actually, Steve Carell kind of annoys me in The Office.
He
and if any,
does, but he's toned it down
yeah,
a lot since he did it
if
first.
If anything, it's Toby the HR guy, the beaten down HR guy, who I love. The intern Ryan and his girlfriend, the Indian girl, like they those are Kelly. Yeah, they make the show for me.
They really do. And I mean, like one little tiny thing, like Steve Carell in the first couple episodes had his hair slicked back.
Yeah, they changed.
They
that.
Stopped that. One thing that they do remarkably well on this show that they don't do with anything else is that they show you that Steve Carell is actually competent at his job.
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais
Michael
was
Scott.
Never good at his
yeah.
job.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
when he got that account,
he
yeah,
gets the
yeah.
account. Like every once in a while, you're
he
like, I see
a lot
why
of big
he's
deals.
There.
Yeah.
And they like he's a weenie, but yeah. like at the same, he's good at it. And then conversely, Jim is really good at his job, and Dwight is really good at his job.
Yeah.
And like it makes it so much more believable. And yeah. they give you those,
that's
and they give
point.
You just enough to
believe it, to buy it.
Yeah,
yeah
but
yeah,
also
yeah.
to like to find something admirable about them, so that. You don't, you like, at first, Michael Scott was just annoying, and you were like, why would anyone put up with this? You'd quit the job, it'd be terrible.
Yeah.
And they had to give you a reason to have an affinity for them and do something, and that's, I mean, that's, it's just really well done.
It was great, and whereas Earl, which I still love, and I still, is
no,
fantastic,
no,
I feel as if it's gotten a little repetitive, and they haven't really broken it, although the hour-long Saving Catalina episode with John Leguizamo jumped ahead for me.
I think they've been really. I would disagree in the fact. I think they've been really good at breaking
yeah.
the format of what's expected of that. Every week they yeah. could go thing on the list. Here's the
right,
thing.
Yeah,
let's
yeah,
do
yeah.
it. And they've
yeah.
they've gotten away from that some.
But I kind of like that aspect. I mean, I don't know. I kind of like. I mean, like because this year they brought in extended storylines. Whereas
there was a couple
last
of times where they did. You would say they would do it too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to the breakout of the show, and if she is not winning Emmys soon,
Jamie Presley.
Jamie
oh, yeah.
Presley.
Oh yeah, she's brilliant.
Me and Connor were talking about it. She's. I don't think there's anybody women doing a better job
no.
on a comedy
no.
anywhere.
Yeah, she's.
But is there really comedy besides these two shows on TV? That's any
well,
good.
Well, there is, but
oh, that's any good.
But Two and a Half Men.
We ain't watching it.
No, but that's the point. Is there any good comedy besides these two shows?
Reba.
Is anyone watching these shows though?
No.
No.
Earl and The Office.
No. Yeah.
Oh, they're downloading them.
That's true.
Yeah. Well,
that saved The Office.
Yeah, but it for how long?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like they're not getting great ratings. But they're so good. Like I, every single time, I get the same feeling from The Office I do from The Wire.
I don't. Do you guys really worry that much about ratings? Like I don't. I don't pay attention.
In the sense that I want
to
know if the show I like is going to continue on.
Yeah, that's
Other than that, I'm just under the precipice. As soon as I start to like something, they'll figure out a way to kill it.
Well, I started. You know, when we were watching Studio 60, I was watching the ratings every week because I did not want it to be
canceled.
And all
those rumors and all that stuff.
Yeah, and they stuck
with it.
That's
the only thing that matters. Other than that, I don't care what comes in first or second.
No, it doesn't matter to me at all. I mean, honestly, all of us are like the less people watch. Watching it, the cooler we feel.
I mean, I just personally think the whole rating system is just shot.
Well, it's all broken. It's not true.
We're in a time of transition, and the rating system doesn't work, the broadcasting system doesn't work, and we're watching it end, and we need the new model to come through.
But in the meantime, a lot of good ships are going to go down, which is unfortunate.
Exactly. Well, it's a war. You got to be ready for some sacrifice.
I'm not ready to sacrifice The Office. It's my favorite thing that's come along in comedy in such a long time.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really, really good. Toby's just the best.
So many good things about it.
We talked about this. You talked for like a half hour. That was the best moment. Oh, it was great with Toby. I love him.
Oh, what more to be said? Let me talk right now about the nerd show of nerds, Battlestar Galactica. Ron, we tried to get you on board, and it just didn't take.
I'm catching. Right. I watched the premiere, and then I watched the recap, and I downloaded the first two seasons. I gotta watch them. But now that we're in reruns, and that like there's no TV, that's on my agenda.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm still engaged. I like the concept.
I got Connor caught up. I think you were behind, but now you're on episode.
Yeah, I'm on
as they come
now.
Out. Mm-hmm. I have mixed feelings about the current season. I really liked the end of the last season. I think there's bits of this season that kind of drag, but there's also bits of it that have just been awesome. That boxing episode
was great.
Was fantastic TV. I really want Baltar to be back.
Well, this season they really shook up the status quo more than the first two,
which is I like.
And it's hard to say. I mean, it's hard for me to judge if I like it or not based until I see where they're going with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially now that they're at the half season finale, so you don't know where it's going to go. But you were saying before how you want Gaius Baltar back on the ship. He's not in the ship anymore. He's with the Cylons, and I hadn't thought about that until you mentioned it. But he was an element of the show, and the interaction he had with the military people that was really strong.
Yeah.
And the problem is there really is no way to get back to it.
No, and you know that's where the story has to go.
Especially after you kill half
the
people.
They hinted that they were going to last week, I think.
Well, no, but even if they brought him back on the ship for them to beat the hell out of, it's not like he's back on the ship joking around with all the people.
But you know what, though? That show, you know, they have Sharon, who is now on the ship. She was a Cylon.
She didn't kill anybody.
It doesn't matter, but she was still a Cylon. At a certain point, you thought
they'd never would have happened there. There's no believable way for them to bring Battlestar back on the show.
They have come up with stuff that was horrible things that happened. Remember when they had Chief and Hilo were arrested because they'd shot the officers on the other ship.
Yeah, to stop them from raping somebody. There's no believable way to bring a mass murderer back onto the ship
and have
them.
Any show,
please get along. Why are we fighting?
There's any show that can turn it around, though. I say
there's no believable way that they can possibly do
it.
Well, we'll see. Tune in next week to see if they can bring him back on the ship.
When
or
does
not.
The show come back?
I don't know what they're talking about.
I don't know.
Never. No? It got canceled.
I'd be so
probably
upset.
Into January. Well, speaking of, I don't know.
But now I feel like I'm seeing the show everywhere. Do you feel like that?
Yes and no. I mean, I think it's broken through in popularity more this year.
Yeah. No, it's not. The ratings are down.
But
awareness.
But they're pimping it everywhere.
Ratings don't equal popularity.
Ratings equal if the show exists.
That's exactly what they mean.
Popularity is about numbers.
Right, I know, but I don't think the ratings work. I don't think
unfortunately, that's all they care about.
If you look at the Nielsen ratings, it doesn't match what I watch. It doesn't match what you watch.
It doesn't matter.
You're not.
All right, well, this is it.
You're not a cross section of America.
Right, yeah, and I know, but I don't agree with the cross
section.
They're
not enough
of
you.
Right.
They
should
just do
a
network.
They should just do a Nielsen ratings in the Northeast and in California. I think that's all that matters. I'm kidding.
Oh, God. And he's the conservative one.
I'm kidding. Speaking of cancellation and bad ratings and shows having a target on their back, my favorite show on TV, The OC,
Here's why.
It's got a 16-episode order this year, and they've written all 16 to end in 16, so they're probably not going to extend it to 24 episodes. So that's probably the death knell for it.
Plus, all the actors have said that it's over.
Well, no, I haven't. Have they said that?
Rachel Bilson was on the Jimmy Kimmel Show. She said it's done.
All right, I hate you. Well, they're done with they're done shooting the season.
No, the show is done. She said
they could get picked up on the CW, but whatever. Nonetheless, what's really sad about that is that, like I was saying earlier, the first six episodes of The OC were excellent television. Were fantastic television.
You heard about in pop culture
right.
for those 6 weeks.
And then it went. And then in that first season, they hit the Oliver storyline, which kind of ruined things. And the past two seasons have been all right, but they haven't been as good. After the first four episodes of this season, they captured the magic again. And now it's like it's on tonight. I TiVo'd it, and I'm gonna go home and watch it right after we do this. Like it's a must watch for me again because Josh Schwartz, the creator, the guy who did the first six episodes, came back, and the quality just jumped as far as you know. Just and
funny how that happens.
And the thing about it is that it's an ensemble cast. Much like 90210 was, but it's mixing a little bit of the drama, mixing a little bit of the relationships, mixing a lot of the humor, and the fact that they've got the kids and parents, you know, kind of, you know, balanced.
You say 90210 like it was the gold standard of television for everybody else, not just you.
Name a show that's been on for 10 years.
But I'm saying it's not like, I don't know anybody else who's like, people will be like,
your wife.
You know the early episodes of The West Wing?
Your wife.
No, it's a...
She's with me.
Fine, but you two are the only ones.
No, my sister is not true at all.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, do people...
See,
I don't think that people consider it a good show, but they consider it a...
But the thing is, they don't consider it the way you consider TV. No, all they care about is if they enjoy it or not.
I know that, but that's what I'm talking about.
They don't.
Well, what does that sentence say?
No, but it's you enjoy it or not. Yeah, I mean, the writing was good enough.
As we do, and you in particular.
I mean, the thing is, don't get me wrong. I would never compare 90210 to something like Studio 60. I mean, they're in different orbits. Or 90210 to Twin Peaks. Or 90210 to 30-something. Or 90210, you know what I mean? Like,
Did you watch 30-something?
Oh, I love 30-something.
What were you, 12?
No, what's funny
How
about
did you
that,
understand?
I wasn't allowed to have a TV in my bedroom when I was, like, in sixth grade. So I went to Radio Shack and I bought a radio that picked up the audio TV signal. And I used to sit.
You should see the look that Connor and I just gave each other.
I used to sit in my bedroom listening, and on Long Island, all you could pick up was Channel 8, which was the ABC affiliate in New Haven, Connecticut, across the sound. So all I could listen to was ABC. And so I would, like, when I had to go to bed, I'd be in my room and I'd be reading comics, listening to China Beach, listening to 30 something. And what's really interesting
about
that.
Old-timey radio.
Yeah, you make fun of it, but you have to imagine. And so, like, what happened was, like, I'm in sixth grade and I'm trying to catch glimpses to see what the characters look like. And then in my head, I'm picturing what was happening. And then in high school and college, I caught a lot of the reruns on Lifetime. And wow, I can't believe I'm admitting this on the internet. and I cut the reruns on Lifetime and the cable. And then I rewatched on A&E and Bravo and stuff like that. 30 something was fantastic. The woman who did 30-something was the woman who did My So-Called Life. 30-something, and your wife will agree with me with this. It was
Listen,
great TV.
I don't hold her teenage child or teenage TV favorites as my gold standard of things.
Yeah, Lindsay and I have more common TV than you and Lindsay.
I'm not all attracted to you.
I enjoy the same reason why you enjoy Grey's Anatomy. It's kind of that candy-like morsel. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy an entertaining ensemble relationship-y kind of show. The same reason why I like kind of relationship-y kind of books and mm-hmm. comics and stuff like that. So the OC is back, and I just hope that, A, it sustains. Although there's a couple, I read some of the spoilers coming up, and I'm afraid they might be going down again. But we'll see. And hopefully it gets picked up and doesn't die this season. But if it does, I still always have those first six episodes. So,
California.
No, it was great.
Here we come.
All right, I don't want to talk about what was great.
So anyway, let's move on to another show that Ron obsesses over.
It's the best show.
You should talk about this show now.
It's the best show on TV. It's Sopranos. It's the best show.
It's still the best show on TV.
Yes, after waiting however many years, this season delivered, if you ask me. It absolutely delivered. And my barometer for if it delivered was on the last episode, the next week, the next Sunday after the last episode, if I'm really down that there's no more new Sopranos, and I was really down. You had Gay Vito this season.
That was good.
You had brilliant Christopher characterization.
Yep.
You had movement in the Tony getting shot and in the beginning of the season and the whole hanging on death's door type thing.
I hated those two episodes.
They were really good though, really good. The Steve Buscemi at the cameo with the whole remember the party, that freaky thing. I thought they were good.
I didn't like them. I'm not saying they're bad.
Yeah, I mean there was just a lot crammed in. The Johnny Sack in prison, the crying at the wedding. Oh my god, it was just like it was really really good.
I felt like this season. I've forgotten all of that stuff.
Yeah,
because it's so long ago. Yeah,
no, because I hadn't. I remember the rest of the show, and I couldn't stop watching it. There were a lot of good moments this year. There were things that I liked about it, but I didn't think cohesively there was an overall thing that they were going towards that I wanted to know what happened next.
That's one of the reasons why I love the show, because it's brilliant, is because it actually doesn't matter. Like, it's not. Like, I know that there's a purpose of telling a story and move forward, like, you know, like Christopher with the movie stuff and all that kind of stuff.
You know,
but the thing is that it's, what I find is really interesting is that they handle the gaps in time almost in real time on the show. Mm-hmm. So the same time has passed. It's not like there's a cliffhanger, we're waiting to see what happens next season. This is just, like, this is their life and this is what happens and we're just watching. And sometimes shit happens, sometimes stuff doesn't, sometimes storylines get left hanging because
they drop it like it's hot on that show, like,
right, but sometimes in life storylines hang, you never get resolution or you never, or something, you know what I mean, like, it's very,
but this isn't real life, it's storytelling, and storytelling has to have an end.
No, it doesn't have to.
It does.
I believe it has to.
Well, otherwise, I mean, you can watch, I mean, this is probably a philosophical difference, but you're watching a story. If you go into anything that the in comics or in film or documentaries, books or anything, it's a story, and a story has to have an ending. And I don't, I realize that there's a realistic life isn't really like this, but I'm not watching real life. I'm living real life. I have that that. I want to watch a story that does a thing.
But it's kind of like a fly on the wall kind of. That's what I like about it is that like I'm not looking for resolution. I'm not looking for Tony's redemption. You know what I mean?
I'm not either, but it's got to be building towards something. And in this season, I just didn't feel like it as much. I just didn't care as much. I had fun watching it. Don't get me wrong. There was a lot of really good stuff that happened this year, but it did not have the energy that it used to have for me.
This show had the best moment of the year, which was somebody punching out Lauren Bacall.
That was really awesome.
I bet you they were lining up for miles in Hollywood to
play
this.
That was really good.
I'm not a Sopranos expert because I came on
you
late.
You came on late. Yeah.
I watched the first three seasons of DVD and I watched the last two seasons on television.
I forgot. I was constantly explaining stuff for you.
I feel like it doesn't have the urgency the first three seasons had.
Part of the delays and all stuff like that.
I don't know. What Josh's point was more cohesive. I'd watch the DVDs and I would want to fly through them because you'd want to get to the next part. It's more meandering now. I don't necessarily need to see the next episode.
I don't need to see Dr. Melfi at all anymore.
Oh, well, she's
awful. The great thing about the DVDs is you can fast forward through the Dr. Melfi scenes. And I fast forward through just about every Dr. Melfi scene in the series.
Tony.
It's still a good show.
Yeah.
However, ironically, what does it spawn this year? The greatest thing ever. Anytime anybody's trying to recommend to anybody to do that, Chrissy comes up now. You should because of the greatest scene ever.
You should do that.
Isn't it the thing in one where where it's your wedding day, he has to do anything you want? And he's like, no, it's the other way around. You should tell him you don't want to do that thing. But I will say, when he got back on heroin, I was totally like, no! He's an asshole. He's a horrible person.
Yeah.
I shouldn't want good things to happen to him. Right. And I don't want him to hook up with hot nurse Carol Hathaway. I don't want him to, you know, by the way. Who?
Speaking of, well, that's a good segue into ER.
Thank you.
Which
I didn't do that on purpose.
So now we're conflicted because Ron and I have been loyal ER viewers since high school.
High school.
Yeah. Luckily, you guys can talk about this, and it has absolutely nothing to do with where I am.
And Josh has just this year watched the DVDs for the first four seasons.
I am so addicted to that show.
That's really good.
And I have to say, that is, for me, is the surprise of the year.
Yeah, it is.
And I would never in a million years have suspected that you would enjoy
it. I thought you would have dismissed it purely because we liked it.
No, I thought it was too melodramatic
for you.
Yeah, no.
It is, and I think that's the part of it that I don't like. I think that they got really, and I'm still with the first cast, basically. So, you know, I think that there was a charisma and a certain melding of the first people who were on it, from George Clooney and Noah Wiley, and I just, like, for whatever reason, their particular chemistry was really good. Now, they're not on it anymore.
I want to be John Carter. Like, my model, like, I love him.
I want to be Doug Ross more than you will ever know.
And you'll get it as it goes longer, because Carter stayed around.
But that's fine.
This is the first...
He will never be... Doug Ross is getting to be one of my favorite TV characters of all time, for no reason.
Yeah.
Well, because Clooney's...
I have
a long-held non-sexual man crush on Doug
Ross. I don't know if it's non-sexual.
Is this the first season without any of the main cast?
No, Laura Innes.
Well, she's first season.
No,
but she's not.
She wasn't in the pilot.
No, she was in the second season.
This is the first season without Carter, though, right?
He was in a couple episodes last season.
Right, so this is the first...
He was a guest star last year.
But he was in... He was
well, his deal now is he can come back whenever he wants and talk about Dark.
This is the first totally clean season from the original cast.
Yeah.
Ironically, this is probably the best the show's been in like 4 years.
Yes, this year it's got a renaissance.
And why?
John Stamos. Who knew?
Out of nowhere.
Uncle Jesse?
Who knew? Fantastic. Not just him. I mean...
But they brought in some new people, but John Stamos seems to be the one that stirs the pot.
It's been great. I'm quietly becoming a big Mekhi Phifer fan.
Yeah.
And
he passed me on the road one day in a Mercedes with giant chrome rims.
Really? Did you sing, "There's no Mekhi Phifer"?
I don't know what that means.
Don't sing the Eminem, Oscar-winning Eminem song.
See, I don't know. I'm so out of touch.
You know what it is, though? It's almost like they've thrown off the shackles of the expectations from the original cast.
It's like, we don't care.
And
like,
now it's like Abby's a great character.
Yep.
Ray's a great character.
Kovach
is finally becoming not annoying.
Yep.
He was the attempt to replace Doug Ross.
Neela's still annoying.
I love Neela. What's Gates?
Yep.
I mean, they finally have a core of really good characters now. And you
care about them.
Is this show going to keep going?
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Is it going to be the show that wouldn't die? Like in 40 years, is it going to be Cockroaches, ER, and The Simpsons?
Yeah.
Well, they just keep putting in new people.
It's great. I mean, it's great.
It's shockingly a creative renaissance this late in the season.
Does it get bad?
No, not yet.
Asking you. I'm asking him. I don't trust your opinion on this. I mean, like, the actual show itself. Like, is there a point when the season's, like...
The whole run of the season?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there are some low points. Oh, no, yeah, I thought you meant this season.
Oh, right, okay,
no, there are some low points. There are some low points where you can tell that they're directionless. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to try new things, but also stick to the same old things. They're trying to bring in template characters
to fill spots.
This is going to be the Green, this is going to be the Ross, this is going to be the Carol.
We
can
do that.
Like Connor says, it's like they finally broke off the shackles. Like, mm-hmm. fuck it, we're going to do something, we're going to do whatever we want. And
bring in total new.
It does get down. It does go down.
Before this season, probably the three previous seasons were very.
Has Corday popped up yet?
Oh yeah.
Okay, she gets bad.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to ruin.
I guess she doesn't get deported because that's where she's kind of.
Unfortunately, I wish she had. In fact, I would have chipped into the INS to help that happen. Oof. If she was real. She got really annoying after.
Oddly enough, my wife just had a dream that I had an affair with Corday and woke up mad at me.
Nice.
I don't even like her. Yeah. I totally have a thing for Maria Bello now, though.
Oh yeah, that was good. That's short lived though. But
I don't need you to tell me that.
I'm sorry.
I don't need that. No, at all.
By short lived, I'm
short lived.
No, she wasn't. I wish. But if he gets to those episodes, we need to talk before Kelly Martin when she comes on the show. Before you watch the episodes, we need to talk. But Maria Bello, I meant short lived, but like I wish he had stayed longer.
Right.
I
mean, well, that happens. Yeah, people come on for a year and be gone.
So
moving on.
Best hour of TV.
24.
Hands down.
This is your wire.
Edge of the Seat.
This is more of a popcorn roller coaster ride.
Yeah,
show.
like
it's it, if you think about it, if you stop to think about the storyline, the holes are a mile wide.
Yep.
It doesn't make sense logically, but you are strapped in for an hour and you're blown away, and then it's just just wanting to the next part.
This past season was probably one of the
Emmy for best actor and best drama this year.
I mean, it was one of the best of the 5 years so far it's been on.
Do you know why I haven't watched this?
Why?
Because I was looking at my Netflix queue and I said, Connor, should I get The West Wing or should I get 24? And he looked at me and he went, you? West Wing.
I also have the 24 DVD if you want that. So. Season 1. But
yeah, so do I.
It is just...
I do.
It is just action-packed.
It's just great. It's fantastic. Yeah, and Kiefer is the man. And I miss Tony on me.
He's actually good in it.
He's great. He's fantastic, yeah. And what's great, I mean, and the thing is that it's so much fun. Like, me and my dad talk about it all the time.
Because, it's fun to put balls in it.
Yeah, we're both techies. And so, like, mm-hmm. we laugh about, like, the obvious, you know, bending of the internet rules and stuff like that.
Real-time, perfect resolution satellite.
But not even that. But it's just throwing around terms. Like, I'll open a socket for you. It's like, oh, come on, nobody says that. You know what I mean? Like, it's, you know, like, but it's fantastic. It's totally popcorn. It's totally,
popcorn all the way, but it's fun.
Love it.
Connor's email, I think you've changed it, but when I first got
it's still that.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
When you get an email, it was Jack
Bauer. Oh, Jack Bauer screaming. It's not that
But,
nice.
Like, the thing is, he was really screaming, and you had it really loud, so from anywhere in the house, you would just hear, who are you working for? And I was like, what the fuck is that?
It was really good.
It scared me when I was alone in the apartment.
But, and they are, if you ask me, the trendsetters in the start in January, go straight through May. No breaks.
Because the first year...
What night?
Monday night. Yeah,
that's going to be a problem.
That is going to be a problem, because 24 wins in that gamble.
Yeah, it does.
We'll figure it out.
The reason why they did that was because the first two seasons, Kiefer Sutherland kept getting drunk, and he broke something the first year.
It was an alcohol-related injury. Do you remember that?
And so then, with a show like 24, it matters to go consecutive, and that just blew it. So now they go consecutive.
Yeah, so.
This was the end of Deadwood.
I was so sad
too bad.
At the end. You know what? You quiet your mouth.
Cowboys. I'm just kidding.
I can't tell you. I always knew what was going on Deadwood. I didn't. I mean, like that was a show from the very first episode, and a lot more in the middle of it, where you're watching it and you're just like, wait, slow. What happened? I remember I watched the first episode and I was like, I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you.
Yeah. Well, this season brought to you, which was fantastic, was an evil Gerald McCraney.
Evil. And I cannot see him as anything else because he's on
McCraney
the Jericho now or whatever.
He's like Major
Dad.
Major Dad.
Simon.
He's always like the upstanding guy.
Yeah.
He was an evil fuck in this show. Like he was just like, he just exuded in his eyes and his actions. He grew like a shaggy beard and like...
Yeah. He was bad. And he was a great villain. They did this thing where they flipped around where the show started. Al Swearengen is the bad guy. by the end, he's not the bad guy. He's not the good guy. He's not. It was just this. Everyone was.
You know,
gray.
They had to do. You know, I think what happened was season one, he's the bad guy. Season two, he was too much the good guy.
Yeah.
Season three, they had to remind you he's the bad guy. He just callously cut that guy's throat.
Yep.
Very like.
He had to kill one of the hookers.
And he killed the hooker.
Oh.
Very callously, very coldly. This.
Yeah.
But the one that got it was when he cut that guy's throat. That mm-hmm. was such a cringe-inducing scene.
Yeah. That show was very cringe-inducing, and the idea was to show you...
How awful the West was.
Yeah, how awful life probably was back then.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking, I was so sad. Like,
I was sad, but I thought that the last shot was fantastic. Al is the guy who is... He runs the town. He's the de facto. He runs the saloon and the whorehouse. He's the de facto.
He's the boss Nass of the town. Wait, no, that's wrong.
There's a mayor, but he's the de facto leader of the town. Okay. And crime boss, sort of. And he's killed a lot of people, spilled a lot of blood in the last...
Killed a lot of people, spilled a lot of blood.
The last scene is he kills this hooker in order to save...
Oh, right. Okay, woman. I remember now.
So he's got to produce a body, so he just kills one of his hookers. Just, yeah.
Because
like,
he needs to, for somebody else to go away, he's got to give them a body.
And the last scene is him on his hands and knees scrubbing away at the blood stain on the floor, and he can't get it out.
Nice.
And
it's kind of... You know,
no, but it was.
It sounds more heavy-handed than it is.
It was great. I mean, because he didn't think it was ending, so they just pulled off, and he was.
Yeah, there was the one scene that really stood out for me this year was the fight.
Yeah.
Between Doherty and Major Dad's guy. There was a fight that was basically the nastiest, most realistic, wet slapping two guys punching
sound effects,
each other.
No music.
Oh, really?
No, nothing.
Just
raw,
two guys just pounding on each other.
Big burly men. Yeah, I mean, it was like there was like an eyeball an popped eyeball out. I don't mean to say that in a way like in a bad horror movie when an eyeball pops out. Like in a way that you really literally look like you were looking at a medical show and you're like, oh, I don't want to look at that.
What was the what show or movie did we see that had a really raw fight like that where we were like taken aback because it was so raw?
Heroes?
Was it Heroes? No. There was no music. What was it? Oh, damn, that's going to drive me crazy now. There's something where we talked about it. We're like, oh, there was like, it was very, it was kind of like the sex scene in 8 Mile when there was no music and it was just, anyway. So, anyway.
The last show I just want to mention briefly, I think it's Veronica Mars. I think it's got the relationship-y angle, high school, college stuff that Ron would like, and it's really smart crime.
So this is the best show that neither of us are watching.
The best show that neither of you watch is Veronica Mars.
Well, because if you and I were one combined being.
Yeah. So you could come together like the Wonder Twins. Then you'd be cool.
Yeah, I know you love the show. And you're glad that... I thought it was toast when the CW thing happened.
I
thought it was going to get cut. So you think it's going to last to next season?
The ratings are up. So.
Okay, this is going to last to next season?
If the CW does, then yes.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that network will last.
Yeah, well, let's hope they end Smallville.
Oh, yeah.
Smallville's been great this year.
We didn't even mention Smallville.
Well, now I'm mentioning it.
Smallville, has a creative reticence.
But it's got to end. It's got
to be
It's got to be the last season, yeah. Yeah. Although I'm psyched for the Justice League episode.
They've lost all their talent, haven't they?
No.
Everybody's
They've lost their talent. They lost all the comic book people I know who worked on it. They lost Jeff Loeb and Mark Verheiden and someone else.
The only actor they lost was
Pete.
Bo talent, I'm talking about writers every time.
Yeah. And they lost Sam Jones 3, who's now in ER, and he's gay.
Yes.
So, all right, wow, we've been talking for a long time. And before we move on, let's take a little break. You've been listening to part one of iFanboy.com's 2006 year-end media wrap-up. Be sure to come back on Wednesday, January 3rd, and download part two, where we talk about IPTV, music, and comics. So until then...
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.